everybody, and welcome to the Android Central Podcast. It is episode number 285 for Thursday, April 28th, 2016. Welcome to the show. I'm Phil Dickinson. This is the Android Central Podcast. We're back again. Feels like it's been a while, but it kind of has been a while, right, Jerry?
Been a while.
Because we did that pre-recorded Q&A one last time. That was fun. That was good. If you haven't listened to it,
yeah,
you
those are always good.
I thought it was really good questions. And to make up for that, I have prepared exactly zero voicemails or emails for this week.
Save them.
No. We'll catch back up on those next week, maybe. Because we've had a lot going on. I feel like I've been writing all week. I've actually been working. It feels good. Not traveling. So Jerry's here. Russell Holly is here.
Hello.
Now, Russell, back when... I forget if it was last week or the week before or whenever you said the next show you're going to be wearing one of your VR things the entire podcast.
Yep, that's what I said.
Now, look, we're cheating and we're only doing audio this week. And to be honest, we might only do audio for a little while going forward. Just because. Why not? This week, it's mainly because my office is a wreck. It's in really bad shape this week. So which one are you wearing, Russell?
Today I'm wearing the Oculus Rift.
Why? Why Oculus?
Oculus is closer to my desktop right now. I have the lighthouses for the Vive set up on the other side of the room, and I'd have to move them over here to use them really well. To use the Vive like sitting down in a chair.
Oh, so you're actually like watching, not watching something, because that's not the right experiential word for VR. But like, what are you actually seeing something, or are you just wearing the visor?
Yeah, I have Oculus Rift has an app. It's a virtual desktop, and it just takes my Windows desktop and kind of makes it look like a 55-inch television in front of me and curves it a little bit so I can look and see my whole desktop. So it's, you know, it's not all that different from when I normally use my computer.
But you're playing solitaire. It means that you can have the experience of having like five monitors all around you without actually purchasing five monitors.
Right. Yeah. It makes it so that, you know, there's some flexibility there, and it's kind of neat for when I'm doing, you know, 30 or 40 things at once, but it, you know, it's also not quite as high resolution as the monitor sitting, you know, 6 feet from me or 5 feet from me. So it's not something that I would do every day, but it's really not bad.
Alex, are you wearing any sort of virtual anything?
I am wearing an analog headset, which I guess is just headphones.
What are you wearing? What are you wearing?
Not creepy at all.
Virtual trousers.
Yeah.
That'll be our standard intro for every podcast from here on out. What are you wearing?
I'm wearing my normal human eyes and a desktop monitor, unfortunately.
I think we might have just found the show title for this week, too.
What are you wearing?
I mean, it has to be, right?
I am wearing human eyes, just my own. Not anyone else's.
It is impossible to beat that for a show title this week. Oh, so there's a lot going on. Let's start with kind of the meta one that I wanted to talk about anyway, and that would be podcasts. as was foretold, we now have podcasts in Google Play Music, and actually just today, Thursday, I somehow managed to write like 2,400 words on podcasts in Google Play Music. Are all you guys trying it?
Yep, definitely no. Trying this thing that I'm not allowed to use.
Because, okay. Let's.
Yeah, so it's still US and Canada, right? Only at the moment.
How insane is that? Well, I mean, nothing.
I kind of think this through. No, I think it's through. The way they're going at this is not just a collection of podcasts, but it has to be localized. And of course, the whole the background stuff that makes Google Play Music work in the same way that it does for playlists and moods and stuff. That needs to be adapted for podcasts in different regions. And that is more than just getting the same old podcast that you get in any podcatcher and putting them together in one place. So I kind of get what they're getting at there. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense when you think that the success of podcasts is based on just having open access to it and be able to download them from anywhere, basically, as an MP3. But it's something that is going to need to be localized. You're going to have different moods and stuff like that, and that needs to be brought over to different regions. When you're just talking about the English language and it's not available in all English-speaking countries, that's kind of insane. But at the same time, they're moving slowly, which probably isn't a bad thing.
So, okay. if you go into the categories, and I broke it out into three things, right? Discoverability, playback, and then stuff for, I called it showrunners, you know, for podcast creators, as Google would say. Discoverability, I thought was pretty bad. It looks like they're only using what people sent in, you know, what creators sent them. And I get it, but you're Google. You search everything. You have these cool little spider robot crawler things that search the internet. In fact, I was sitting in the airport in Canada last week reading the Android security report for the year. And one of the really interesting things I thought was in there, and I didn't mention that in the one thing I wrote up, was that they crawl the entire internet for APKs and then scan those things. And that was really interesting. Why can they not pull in more podcasts than they are already? Or the better question is, why are they not doing it?
Wait, it's not because they can't. It's just that they have to take this slowly. It's a slow, gradual launch. It's Google being the slow, cautious Google, as opposed to just putting it out there for everyone, and maybe it's broken, maybe it's not.
It's not like podcasts are new.
Phil, are you suggesting that they should list podcasts that people haven't submitted to be listed?
Yes.
No.
I see where this is going, but why not?
No. Why do we have our names and Android Central on this one? For copyright purposes.
Right. It's this on the feed.
You control this. You submitted this product.
We made the feed. That feed is a publicly available feed. How is that any different than crawling a web page?
I would not feel good if Google just pulled every podcast off the internet and made it available in their podcast playing application.
Yeah, there's something, I mean, fair enough, a feed is always going to be open and generally more or less always going to be ad-free. If you talk about just pulling MP3s off someone's web server, that kind of crosses a line a little bit, I think.
Yeah, no, well, but at the same time, you have that feed pointing to a public server so people can do exactly that. That is what a podcast feed is. Russell's probably sitting there in his virtual world shaking his head at me.
He's playing free cell or something.
It's really hard for me to get excited about much of any of this. I have the one podcast that I listen to when I'm not listening to the Android Central podcast just to see how silly we sounded the week before.
Sure.
And so I don't do a lot of podcasts. So everyone got all excited when Google was bringing podcasts back, and I already have Pocket Cast. They were going to have to work really hard to get me to switch. I was already not going to try this.
I think
now I'm definitely not going to.
Sorry, I think it also has a problem, the same kind of problem that iTunes has in just the name of the thing. It's Google Play Music, not Google Play Audio, right?
Right.
You don't necessarily think to go there for podcast content, and then you have it kind of awkwardly lumped into all your music as well. Whereas with Pocket Cast or any other podcatcher that you want to get to, which has, you know, probably by the way had about 2 or 3 years of development behind it, it's very, very focused. You have a lot of really neat value-added features that have been built up over time through user feedback, and it's just a much nicer experience for that kind of listening. And I would almost prefer a dedicated and better Play Podcasts app than something that's awkwardly tagged on the way this seems to be, based on what I've seen from your write-up today, Phil.
My biggest problem right now, I've got 4 phones on my desk that are turned on. Only one of them can use it because it's April and I've already hit their stupid limit.
Oh, in the music limit? Ooh, yep. No, see that. Well, I mean, again, that's a niche problem for us, but still, that's really interesting that that's subject to it.
I'm okay. Yeah, I'm okay. I understand why they do that with commercial music.
Sure.
But this, by bundling podcasts into it, they made it unavailable to people in this situation.
See, I'm glad I didn't think of that before. At some point, I felt like I was just kind of beaten up on it, and I was trying to be, you know, more constructive. We're 1 week into this; things absolutely will get better and change. But for me, the frustration was more, you know, Google's done podcasts before; it's been more than 3 years, but we were all there. And then, you know, like this is what we get after all that time. It's not very compelling to me. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's just, it's a foot in the door.
It's not like Google's been working on it in the background for all this time, though. It's just a different product from the ground up. It's not a continuation of Listen or whatever it was called back in the day.
I like to think they had a few extra beers at lunch one day and said, hey, let's put podcasts in the Play Music app. Hell yeah.
Well, no, look, I think somebody recognized not necessarily the importance, but I just totally forgot it starts with a P. What is the popularity of podcasts like Serial and, you know, This American Life in podcast form and any other number of really popular podcasts out there and said, why are we not doing this? Well, we used to, but it got killed. You know, I see that happening. But my answer for all that is this is what we get. It's okay. I expected more. Do you think maybe they're actively trying not to infringe on proper podcast applications?
No. No, I think Alex nailed it. They just said, okay, let's try this and see how it goes for a while before we do anything else.
Yeah, fair enough. I thought it was crazy that there's no like proper Android Auto support. Now, I mean, Android Auto is niche.
But I mean, a lot of things don't work with it, right? Not just this new feature that you have like entire phones that just don't play nice with it.
Yeah. And that's been a thing too. But yeah, like it's just odd. Like there are parts of it that work really well, and then there are parts of it that are just, there's a big giant banner in Google Play that says, what does it say? Let me go open it up again. It says, where'd it go? Get hooked on a podcast. Stories for any mood on Play Music. And then you tap it, and it takes you right back to the front of Google Play Music.
Yeah, that's what I got when I was region blocked from getting that. So I don't know if that's related anyway. It is strange that Android Auto support isn't in there, because if you think about taking a long car trip or something, you're almost more likely to want to put a podcast or a series of podcasts on for that than maybe you would just a random playlist.
Well, and to that end, you've got, you know, Pocket Cast is still the one I use. And we've got a big link in our thing for the best podcast apps, and everybody has their favorite. But yeah, it's just, it's not great. The one interesting thing is advertising. They still have the right to put ads in it if they want to. But it would just be, I think it was pre and post. Or pre-post and display, maybe. So, like, they're not going to inject, you know, video ads or anything in the middle of your podcast.
So, I mean, how does that figure into the ad-free experience that you're supposed to be paying for with Play Music, which also gets you all the YouTube stuff these days?
There's another question. Yeah, I don't know.
I have a feeling that this is for when they bring a podcast manager to YouTube.
Or it could be for when they, I may be wrong, but there's no current free Play Music thing that's ad supported, is there? Or did they launch that? Am I just imagining things?
Yeah, we've got that, don't we?
Okay, so maybe that's for the free service, but you'd imagine they would get rid of that for paid users.
Russell, is your Night Vale podcast on there?
Yeah, it is. It was on there right away, and it was actually kind of interesting because it wasn't all that long ago that the Night Vale guys decided that they needed to move everything to YouTube so that they had versions of the podcast that were not just in podcatcher form.
Mm-hmm.
So I would be interested in seeing if you know, the end result is something where we get some kind of podcast manager that maybe plays into Hangouts, like the Hangout on Air system.
Still a lot of options. As far as like behind the scenes stuff goes, it's a little rough as well. I was just talking to J.R. Rayfield about that on Twitter, and like, there's no aggregate of like how many downloads you have, and they split it up between downloads and listens. Downloads and plays. So like, and we have more plays than we have downloads, which I guess just means streaming.
That's what I was going to say. It's probably streamed.
Yeah. But then the UI of that is all jacked up, and there's no aggregate. So you can't, you know, without like putting dates into a calendar on there and applying a filter, you can't like get one full number, and it's just, well, you can't even get one aggregated number. It's a little weird.
Or
you can't
just see
how many subscribers you have, which is interesting. We're already showing, I looked on our, and yet we still use Feedburner, which, how is that still alive? And we've got like a third of as many subscribers on Google Play Music as we have on Feedburner, which sounds really high. So I've been, unless Feedburner's just not accurate, which is entirely possible too. So it's interesting. I mean, there are a lot of lot of good things to look out for here, but
It's early days.
It really is. So anyway, that's there. Cool. I'm kind of excited. I'm using it just because I needed to. Somebody, Chad on Twitter, tells me it's better than recording NPR yourself on a cassette tape on your boombox. Somebody's showing his age there, Chad, and I've totally done that. Not NPR, but I had some killer David Lee Roth back in the day. Jerry's done that too.
I never pirated anything like that ever in my life.
That's not pirating. It's pirating. And obviously, it caused the entire downfall of the music industry.
We know this because there is no longer music.
Yeah, correct. Well, I think I could make that argument. It's hard to find good music.
I wasn't even going to go there.
Give us our 8 tracks. Anything else on podcasts? Should I get off that soapbox?
I say give it a year.
Did you feel like you needed a new podcast app?
No, I really don't. I mean, Pocket Cast is awesome. Why?
Because we needed something that comes installed on a phone, and this sure didn't turn out to be it.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I get what you're saying there.
Well, I mean, but Play Music isn't required to be installed anymore, so that didn't even fit my idea of why we needed it.
So one final semi-interesting thing. We have music videos tied in very, very closely with Play Music now. Obviously, a lot of podcasts are on YouTube as well, in video form, like this podcast, when we choose to do video, which we're not today. But there is, I guess, a lot of potential there for those two apps to be talking to each other in the future. And maybe you have the audio version on Play Music and the video version on YouTube, and you can switch between them maybe seamlessly in the same way that you can with music and music videos. That would be pretty cool.
I kind of feel like it needs to be split out from music, though. There's a lot going on.
Yeah, I mean, whatever it is eventually called, whatever that app is, we'll need to talk to YouTube because, you know, there's obviously just a ton of podcast-style content on YouTube, and it makes sense to link those two things together wherever they end up being.
Yeah.
5 years from now, we'll just have one app called G-Tunes.
That doesn't scare the hell out of you. You want to talk about some breaking news today? It's kind of a big deal.
I like to break stuff.
Breaking news. Rick Osterloh, former Motorola CEO, who left, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, maybe, is going back to Google, according to Recode.
Good.
And is part of this new hardware division that includes everything but Nest, because apparently nobody wants anything to do with Nest. Tony Fadell. But it will include Nexus, Chromecast, consumer hardware, which would be Chromebooks and Pixel C. OnHub, ATAP, which is Russell's favorite advanced, we don't really want to call it DARPA, do we? Is it DARPA for Google?
Kind of,
I guess. And Google Glass, for what that's worth. That's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, Pixel phone, Pixel phone. That's what's all phone leading to.
I like Rick Osterloh in charge of that, too. He was very pivotal in turning Motorola around. At least I think he was. And I mean, somebody has to get a lasso around this hardware mess that is Google.
Yeah. And the problem is they keep making good hardware. It's just, hey, nobody sure has it. Nobody
it's
buys
just,
it.
A lot of times you get the feeling that one hand isn't talking to the other hand, and these teams are doing excellent work in a vacuum.
And I can't imagine that ever happening at a large company, let alone Google, Jerry.
But,
no way.
I mean, maybe he can stop the bad parts of that. I'm not saying that's always a bad thing, but sure. Somebody needs to know what's going on in all these divisions, and that's all they need to do, and now we have someone.
Should make for an interesting Google I.O. here in a month.
Yep. Yep, and Alex, I know Alex was kidding, but a lot of people aren't. This means the Pixel phone's coming. No, it doesn't.
Pixel?
Nexus is listed by name.
Right.
As one of the hardware divisions he's in charge of. If this news made you think that a Pixel phone is coming, you just interpreted it wrong.
Yeah, I was semi-joking.
I know you were, but
it's. I mean, look, it's not impossible. It's not impossible eventually, but it's. Sure. I think if that is coming, it is still a long way off.
It would still be. I mean, phone is the important part of that name, no matter what. Well, all right. Speaking of phones, a few more big kind of rumor mill type stuff this week, and I mean it's. Not entirely surprising, but you know, HTC 2 Nexus devices, maybe, Alex?
Yeah, so I did an editorial on this the other week. There are a lot of really sort of compelling business decisions for both of them that would make a lot of sense for HTC to go on board with Nexus and for Google to enable them to do that. I think the rumor that we had was from Evan Blass, kind of corroborating what we'd heard before of a 5 and 5.5 inch Nexus phone. Made by HTC, I forget the exact code names. It was M1 and S1. I think as Android Police was doing some digging around and came up with Sailfish and Marlin. I think was the other one.
Yeah.
So yeah, fish
and
based
fish names are yeah. have always been you know Nexus code names.
Absolutely, yeah. So no real surprises there. There was also some benchmark thing that turned up with a Nexus 6P with the Marlin code name that was running a Snapdragon 820 and getting higher scores than a 6P would with 4 gigs of RAM. So, I mean, no real surprise there. It's, you know, it's going to use whatever the highest end chip is available. And there's not really a whole lot to say about it besides that. If, you know, there's, I think there's enough smoke there that there has to be a fire. You know, it's probably going to be HTC this year, at least with the phones. And it makes sense, like I was saying. HTC has become very partner-focused in the past year. They've got Under Armour for connected stuff. They've got Valve for VR. And now it's mainly Google with the phones. And if you look at what they're doing with the HTC 10, that is a very partner-focused device. Google has a lot of control there. HTC is phasing out some of its apps. The Google apps are coming in. They're obviously very keen on that partnership. It's very important to them. And Google, in turn, has good reason to want to support HTC if they're a manufacturer which, on their own devices, are giving Google a lot of input and a lot of control. So, nothing is final until it's announced on stage, but I would say it's pretty much a done deal at this point.
Nexus 9 is no longer in the Google store either, for what that's worth.
But HTC wants you to know you can buy it from them.
For $400 US, yeah.
Ouch. Russell just sent us a picture of what he's looking at. That's kind of cool.
Oh, that would be amazing if people listening to this podcast could see that picture.
There's your... I was going to say there's your video thumbnail, but...
But we're not doing video this week.
On the Nexus thing, we've got Google I.O. coming out. Obviously, the phones probably are not going to be coming till N is released. But there is always potential for an upset. There's always potential for, like we had with the first Nexus 7, for something unexpected to come out there on the hardware side. What do you guys think to that?
It would not surprise me if we saw N come out sooner than, you know, than the past few years, just because they've got this Pixel C laying around out there. And obviously, it was supposed to be running a different version than it is right now. Or there were supposed to be features in Android that are not yet in Android that we're now seeing in the developer preview. So it would not surprise me to see that they have moved up that timetable.
I would think, I mean, obviously the phones aren't coming. The phones never come early. So I think until they do, we'll see. But I mid-cycle phone release would be kind of unprecedented. I think if they could maybe do it with tablets, but at the same time, if you look at what's coming at N, there is a lot of tablet-focused stuff. There's the Vulkan stuff for gaming. There is all the multitasking, multi-window stuff. It would seem a bit strange to release that on N and then to really take advantage of the new tablet hardware, you would have to wait a couple of months for N. So I would imagine we probably see more of that if there is a new tablet coming in August, and that we go to I.O. and probably take away a bunch of Pixel Cs because no one's buying the Pixel C and Google has a bunch to give away.
How's
that sound to you? Russell, how's that sound to you?
The end roadmap is already out there, so it would be kind of messy for them to adjust it. So we already know that the hardware isn't coming until the end of that roadmap, which would be
all right,
fall.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Summer, it right? Would be cool. I mean, the whole process has started early, and they were saying summer specifically as opposed to fall. So I don't know. I get the impression that things are a little further along, and we're going to see stuff earlier in the year, especially new devices compared to last year.
That would certainly be exciting.
Yeah.
and isn't even close. I don't even think they're on, have met their own time schedule yet. Have you used it?
Yeah,
developed. I mean, use it all. Literally used it day to day and tried to put a SIM card in it and use it. It's horrible.
How is it horrible?
Oh, you know, I think it's horrible when I, oh, my phone rebooted again. Let me type in my PIN. Oh, my phone rebooted again. Oh, nobody can hear me. Oh, what's this crashing? I don't know. Just reboot. That kind of horrible. And that's on, you know, that's on phones that Google knows exactly what hardware is inside them, and they built an operating system specifically tailored for those devices.
And you got to remember that the time, the area of the roadmap that we're in now relative to where we were last year, we didn't even have a developer preview this time last year. So things are obviously a few months further on, and we have this 5-month roadmap. We know when the final APIs are dropping, so we can prepare pretty well for how things are going to shape out, I think.
Google did so well with Marshmallow and the Nexus phones last year. I do not want to see them revert to some of the less than stellar launches that they've had in the past, and users have to wait months before things work like we want them to work.
Fair enough. I mean, yeah, we can all agree Lollipop wasn't exactly an ideal launch. I don't think Google would really be, they wouldn't be so open with this developer preview, and they wouldn't be expanding it to new devices like the Xperia Z3 with Sony now, as they are. They wouldn't be doing that stuff, and we wouldn't be getting developer previews 2 months early if they weren't really confident about the timing and where they were going with it, I think.
Okay, I take back my, I wouldn't be surprised. You guys have swayed me.
What wouldn't you be surprised about?
If we saw it sooner rather than later.
Well, if we were going to see hardware at Google I.O., we would know by now. Look at the calendar.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Nothing can be kept a secret when it's that big. I mean, the Nexus 7 was
They've got a lot of tents out there.
we can say the Nexus 7 was a surprise, but I know Phil remembers.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't a surprise.
It was.
I knew about the Nexus.
I knew about the first Nexus 7 long before it came out.
Yeah. And the refresh. This was not a surprise to anybody who had been paying attention.
Fair
enough. I want to see a third Nexus 7.
Yeah, there's a bunch of circumstantial stuff pointing to maybe Huawei in that direction. They're obviously really keen to be involved with Nexus, and it would make sense for them. And I think they could do a good job with it, couldn't they?
Can they make it cheap and good? That's Asus kind of nailed the second gen there. It was cheap, and yeah, there were some issues with problems like anytime you build something that cheap, and Google isn't the best at customer service, but you know, they shipped out a bunch of them because they were cheap and they still work pretty well. And that's I think is very important.
I think if you ignore the software, then yeah, Huawei can absolutely do cheap and good.
Okay.
VR. Going to be a big IO thing too.
There's something. There's something there.
Nexus visor, Pixel visor,
maybe
visor Pixel.
And I don't think that we're going to see anything at Google I/O, but I think they're going to tell us about something.
We get something. I bet Google does some sort of its own 360 camera.
Well, it's out there now. It's too juicy of a fruit just hanging there for Google to not get involved.
I mean, everybody's doing it.
Yeah. Google's been doing if you think about it, Google's been doing 360 cameras since the Nexus 4, right, with Photosphere. All it needs to do is make a Street View before that. So all it needs to do is take that stuff that it already has and package it into a standalone product. It's not a small task, but all the individual parts are already there.
Exactly. And it's so much easier to use than Photosphere. I was explaining that to somebody the other day. They're like, oh, I've been doing this for, it's so much different when all you do is hold your hand up and hit a button once. Russell, you've played with it some, right?
It's wildly different when you can just take that one picture and for the most part, not have to worry about stitching or anything like that.
Hey, and speaking of all that, Andrew is out at the Samsung Developer Conference right now. And they announced this week that starting on the 29th, this Friday, we'll be available. We'll be able to get the Samsung 360 VR. Is that what it's called?
Gear 360.
Gear 360. don't know how much it's going to cost yet, which is, how do they announce a thing and then it's like available 2 days later and they don't tell us how much it costs yet? It's ridiculous. You guys were guessing
earlier. It can't be more than $350. It
Why?
Can't.
Why?
Because that's how much the Ricoh Theta S is.
Ah. I'm gonna say $299.
If we're to believe what we've seen so far, it's a $399.99 retail price discounted special for $349 for an early thingy from two retailers who had the price listed for a short time. Adorama and B&H. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, you still can't buy LGs from B&H.
If Samsung wants to sell a billion of them, then they'll charge $199. If they want to make money off of them, then they'll charge a lot more. So I'm not sure what their plan is here.
I'm excited for this because it's fun. I've been having a whole lot of fun with it.
You know, I'd be more excited if the Ricoh Theta that Russell just mentioned, mm-hmm. I think they do a good job. They support the open platform for displaying and embedding your pictures, and they've worked with Google to make sure that their output meets the right criteria and have contributed back to the scripting that Google's using so anybody can just post this stuff anywhere. None of these other companies so far have. I don't know if Samsung has or not. But, well, Phil, you know that the LG camera, there are a lot of places you can host stuff, but you can't just slap it in a web page.
No.
And that's where Google needs to come in, even if they have to build their own, you know, inexpensive and it doesn't perform great hardware, but say, look, this is how you do it, and hope that other companies listen.
Well, and some of that from Samsung and LG is just platform maturity. Like, Ricoh has been doing this 360-degree camera thing for like 2+ years now, and their first release was incredibly clumsy. It didn't work very well. It took too long to take the picture, and they didn't really do much of anything with sharing the content outside of the app that they had, and then they figured out the website. So, I mean, it took them a while to get where they are now, and it's awesome that they are where they are now.
I get
it
that.
It took them a bit.
I get that, but it's, I mean, LG specifically, I don't know anything about Samsung, but it's like LG didn't learn anything from that. You can put your stuff on Flickr, or if you do it right, you can put it on YouTube. That's good enough.
We've written it. You got to be able to do pictures on Facebook,
right?
And Facebook does the video really well already. But
just slap it in a container that you can post on any web page.
Yeah.
And Google has, and this is Google. It's not easy, of course. You have to figure out a script and put the right parameters in. But Google has a method so you can post these images on any web page, and you click it and it opens a small container and you can view it. And it's really cool. But, you know, that's a start, but it won't go very far if nobody else is along for the ride.
It's gonna happen.
I hope.
It's gonna be huge. As the man would say. Anything else on that?
We're going to hear whatever it is. We're going to hear a lot of it from I.O. I mean, you just look at the session lineup for all the things that are happening at I.O. It's you know, it's a lot of stuff of VR, a lot of stuff in gaming.
You know what worries me the most, though, Russell? Every time Google has said VR before, they mean Google Cardboard.
It's too much here to just be Cardboard. Like, they're going to keep pushing Cardboard, and they need to, because when it comes to getting it to everyone,
it's the gateway
to you know, Cardboard is still the way to go. And I love that you are now in a position where you're like, okay, Cardboard's cool, but give me more. I've seeped this onto you. So
yeah, and that's not me personally, because, well, and Russell knows this, we've talked, a good VR experience makes me sick. It really, I can't do it for more than just a few minutes, but it is cool and it doesn't make most people sick. So this is why this platform needs to grow. Not for Jerry, but for everybody else.
So say that there is some kind of, not standalone VR hardware, but something more in line with a Gear VR than a Cardboard. And obviously we have a bunch of VR stuff that's going to be built into N. But if we're thinking about new hardware, maybe at I.O., the one thing they could maybe do, based on the stuff that's already in Android, you know, for sensors and motion control and stuff, is you know, maybe build something out through Play Services, and then you have this hardware that ties into it, which is maybe Google's answer to a Gear VR.
Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, if Google came out and said, look, we have this new platform and a new container to put it in, and it's all running on Vulkan, I would die. It would make me very happy.
It couldn't all be running on Vulkan on Marshmallow, right?
Well, it wouldn't be launching immediately, true. But yeah. I mean, it could.
The only issue I would have with that, Alex, is Play Services is already getting out of control. I know why, because it's the only way Google can make stuff work for OEMs who don't care and won't listen. But if we add a layer that big on it, that's going to be a beast. And I think right now, with the way the situation in courts look, Google doesn't want to add yet another process management type of service that OEMs are required to use. So that kind of worries me there. Nerd, go ahead. Yell at me. Call me a nerd.
Well, there's going to be a lot more of that coming up. Hey, by the way, we're going to have a crew at I.O. this year. It's going to be a little insane. So stay tuned for that. And we'll hear more from Andrew next week on the Samsung Developer Conference and what he thought of that and what he saw. Kind of jealous I didn't go. I wish Russell had been there too for all the cool VR stuff.
Russell wished Russell had been there too.
I know. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about the Huawei P9. I've been using it. A review goes up very, very shortly. The video's up now. By the time most people are listening to this, the review will probably be live as well. So, yay. Quick break. Talk about the P9. I want Russell to tell us about these really cool Android Wear, the new straps they have. It's pretty awesome. So hang on. Be right back. All right, everybody, listen to me. If you shave anything, if you shave your face, your arms, your legs, your head, any part of your body, you need to go to Harrys.com. Use promo code AC to save $5 off your first purchase of all kinds of good shaving stuff. Harrys offers high-quality razors and blades for a fraction of the price of the big razor brands. I'm started by a couple guys who wanted a better product without paying an arm and a leg for it. I use it. You should use it. It doesn't get any cheaper and easier than this, all right? They ship it straight to your house. For $15, you get a razor, moisturizing shave cream, 3 razor blades. When you need more blades, they're $2 or less. An 8-pack is just $15. A 16-pack is just $25. Again, it's what I use. Because it's that cheap and it's that easy, they send it to me. I don't have to go get it. Order online. High-quality blades, a great handle and shaving cream, and excellent customer service at half the price. I cannot reiterate that enough. 3 blades, shaving cream, $15, right to your door. Harrys.com, Harrys.com. Use the promo code AC to save $5 off your first purchase. Okay, let's do the straps first. Let's do the watch stuff, because I'm really excited about it.
Figured you were going to do that first.
Were you not ready?
I just discovered a flaw in doing all of this through the VR headset.
You can't see your hands?
I can't see my desk.
Virtual Russell. Ah, poor guy. So, yeah, I mean, we've got these new, it's leather and rubber straps, right? But the big deal is the way they connect. So instead of having, it's essentially a strap that connects to the pin with a quick release, but you leave the pin in all the time, right? In the body of the watch.
Yeah. So it comes with a pin, and you put the pin in like you would put the pin in any other watch, or you put it between the lugs. And then there's this like cavity at the end of the watch strap that you just hook into that pin. And then there's a little button. You push forward the little button and a piece of metal slides in to connect the two sides of that gap. And it's just this really quick, one button release thing for the watch straps, and it's so fast.
Is it really that much better than what Motorola was doing last year with the Moto 360?
Oh, it's so much better. I timed myself swapping between the two of them. I tried to make a nice video out of it, but I'm not very good. And it took me right around 45 seconds to swap out the quick pin on the Moto 360 and on the Huawei watch, because Huawei did the same thing. They had the same quick pin push thing that they did on their watch straps. And then this thing is like, 5 or 6 seconds. Like you're just in and out done. It's so much faster.
How do they look?
It's way less frustrating.
How do they look?
They look exactly like all the other watch straps. Like, you notice on the one side, there are these two little metal pins that you can feel, you know, when it's not connected to your wrist, but when it's connected to your wrist, you can't really feel it because it's almost flush with the band. And the leather that they've got is pretty decent leather. It's better than the leather that Motorola was using on theirs, and not because it's stitched. I know Jerry yelled at me about that last time, because this isn't stitched. It's the same kind of pressed leather that Motorola was using, but it just feels a lot nicer. And it comes in 16 different colors, if I remember correctly.
No metal, though. I want metal.
I know. Well, so here's the thing. This is the thing that was really cool. The connector is open source. Google said that anybody can use it as long as they buy the parts from approved vendors and are assembling the clasps within a set list of tolerances. And as long as you meet those guidelines, you can add the mode branding to whatever band you're making, and any manufacturer can do this and sell the bands like this.
You know, if Apple had done this, we'd all be raising a fit. There's a perfectly good quick release watch band standard that people have been using for 99 years. You can buy watch straps with it from Amazon for $9, or you can spend $1,000, and Google turns around and invents something new and different instead.
Is that the same way, like Asus? I think it's watches.
It's came with quick release. You look at the bottom; it's a little pin. You slide the original Gear Live came with them,
right?
And that's just there's nothing wrong with it. And like I said, it's been around for literally 99 years. And
it's not the same, though. I mean, like the way that the quick pins work, I've bent like six of those because it's tedious the way that you have to line it up to put the pins in there.
I didn't say it wasn't better. I'm just saying it doesn't meet the standard. And since Google and some of their employees are all up in arms about standards and people need to meet them, I think Google should lead by example.
Well, you know, if the standard is 100 years old, maybe it's time for a new standard.
Oh,
I'm not going to disagree with that either. This is more a commentary on when Google does something, we all tend to love it. And we would find fault if other people did it. And
not to put too fine a point on it, but Apple did make their own standard for watch bands on the Apple Watch. And it's terrible.
And we had a fit.
Well,
this has been worth it just to watch them go nuts. No, it's great.
Actually, it only works on their watch. If the Apple Watch clasp system worked on other bands, like there was a way to convert that, I would love it. Because some of the watch bands for the Apple Watch are amazing.
Yep.
They just feel really nice.
I gave Renee Ritchie a hard time about that when I was up in Winnipeg, because dude has a problem. Then he reminded me.
Oh, he collects watch bands like crazy now.
Well, he did remind me that he's not necessarily buying all those. Companies are just sending them to him. And okay, that makes a little more sense. But yeah, it's a little silly.
Somebody with a 3D printer needs to just build a dummy block so Renee can use all his watch bands at one time.
How much do these cost, Russell?
So the leather band that they have, I'm sorry, the silicone band that they have are $50 for each of the ones in the 16 colors, and the leather bands are $60. So what you're getting is it's $20 more than the replacement band that Motorola makes for the exact same watch.
Mm-hmm.
But it feels a lot nicer. The leather feels higher quality, and the clasp works better. So I feel like it's justified in that $20. And I'm sure that other manufacturers are going to pick this up and release them at lower costs. I'm sure that we will have $20 and $30 options to make people happy who want, you know, who don't feel like spending that much. Although spending $50 on your $300 watch really shouldn't be that big a deal, but
I'm not saying it's a good thing, but $50 for a watch band is cheap for a good watch band.
You reckon we'll see new watches in the future shipping with these out of the box?
That's a possibility. I hope so. I like this as a standard, not just for smartwatches, like just watches in general. I like this as a standard. They've released it so that it covers from I think 18 millimeters to 22 millimeters. And you can use it on anything that has normal watch lugs.
And look, I mean, if you buy this, you're still going to have to swap it in like you would basically any other watch strap, right? Until you have that
the first
pin in
time,
there.
Yeah,
the first time. And so the Hadley Roma guys, they actually include a really nice watch pin screwdriver thing, and everything you need to make that transition really smooth, actually.
Okay, I'm just saying it's a little daunting for a lot of people.
Well, you know what? It is until you have done it once.
Oh, right. No, and once I did it, like the first couple of times, it's once pretty quickly now.
You have that little spring bar tool. It's nothing to be afraid of.
Just saying. I think that's all the questions I had about that. Huawei P9. Hey, by the way, Amazon Echo can say Huawei properly.
Hmm.
How about that?
That's better than I.
The person presenting Huawei's press conference on the Huawei P9 had a bit of trouble.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
That's actually kind of a running theme with Huawei press conferences, which is kind of funny. Anyway, the Huawei P9.
The Huawei P9, is this a premium phone, Alex?
Yes. Yes, it is. Yeah, I think it is.
Is this a flagship phone?
Yeah, it's any number of random words that apply to phones that you want to throw at it. It's their standard flagship, and it's their Galaxy S to the Mate's Galaxy Note, if you want to put it that way.
So 5.2-inch display, LCD display, really good screen on this thing. I've been using a lot of new phones lately, and I would say probably GS7 is number one. The screen is number two. Like, to the point where I almost called Alex the other day and was like, are you sure this thing's IPS? It doesn't have any of the weird LCD issues that, like, the G5 or the HTC 10 have. What does that sound?
That is a phone vibrating because I can't turn the volume down without having the... Ooh, I'm sorry. Cut. I can't turn the volume down without having the vibration enabled. Thank God this isn't live.
I'm just going to have Jim bleep you out there, but we're going to let it live for all eternity in your shame and your potty mouth.
Oh, I'm not ashamed. Somebody needs to say that.
What was I saying?
The Huawei P9, it's amazing screen.
Yes, really good screen.
It's almost a vindication of the decision to stick at 1080, right? Because you can...
I am completely fine with 1080p on this. At this size, 5.2 inches?
Yeah, 5.2. It's not a giant phone. It's not like you're noticing the pixel density as much as you would on something like a Mate 8.
Perfectly fine display. Perfectly fine resolution. And that helps with battery life. I keep calling the design of it uninspired. It's not a bad design by any stretch of the imagination. And it's really well built.
It's a bit metal generic, if anything. I think.
Yeah.
And I mean, it isn't deliberately over the top. And I actually think that there are a lot of characteristics about this design, the P9, that I prefer to the HTC 10. I think some of the tolerances are a bit better. I think it's definitely sleeker. You have...
it's thinner for sure. Yeah,
it's thinner. But you also have... the details are also a little bit finer. If you look at the chamfers on the front and the back, you don't just have one giant chamfer. You have... something which gives the impression that it's a little bit more precisely made, like a thinner chamfer on the front, a thinner one on the back, and of course the curves that go around the side that are very, very slight and barely noticeable when you're actually holding it. So
yeah,
there's a lot that I like about the look of this phone. You wouldn't necessarily pick it out of a crowd of phones. It isn't noticeable in the same way that maybe an HTC or Samsung phone would be, but it looks good. I have no problem with the way this phone looks.
What is noticeable is on the back there are two cameras. So here we go again with dual cameras.
And a different way of doing dual cameras compared to what we might be used to in some other phones.
One is color, one is black and white. Great.
Yeah. I guess. I mean, it can take pretty good pictures. It's not terrible, but I think, and I was talking to someone at Huawei about this the other day, that I think the camera budget would have been better spent on just one good camera. And not trying to cheat your way around having a camera bump by just sticking two lenses in there, which I think is what they've tried to do here. I would prefer that they had, they sourced maybe the same kind of Sony lenses that everyone else is, but put the extra money towards OIS or really, really good software tuning. It seems like this is just like, okay, we have X amount of money to spend, but we don't want to go above 7mm, so what do we do? And this is the result.
It's not a bad camera by any stretch of the imagination. I think the whole thing would benefit a little bit. And there are two versions of this out there. One is 32 gigabytes of storage and 3 gigabytes of RAM. And that's what we have.
Yeah, we should kind of reel that in a little bit. Generally, the 4 and 64 gig versions of Huawei phones are generally pretty hard to track down outside of China. So the mainstream one is very much the one we have, the 3 gig and 32 gig version.
But I mean, by the end of the review period, I've had to hop back onto the HTC 10 for a while so I can write something on that. I kind of wanted, and yeah, like I very much wanted to see how it would work with that extra gig of RAM. Even with all of Huawei's annoying little battery saving features and will clear your cache and your trash and mash and whatever and speed your stuff up. Just it started to feel a little laggy kind of by the end of it.
So before I bricked mine, I wasn't noticing any performance issues. There are the Huawei performance settings that can affect that. So it starts off in performance mode.
Tell the fine listeners what you did to break your phone.
I applied an over-the-air update to it.
Manually.
manually, yeah. But I mean, come on. There's a reason why Google puts it, arranges its OTAs in the way that it does. You should not be able to brick a phone by applying an OTA made for that phone. I mean, come on.
That is correct.
But yeah, so mine is dead right now. I didn't notice any particular performance issues before. a lack of any kind of performance whatsoever. But I mean, like I was saying, Huawei has these performance modes. There's the super low performance mode, which is like a battery saving mode. There's the middle one, which I think is what it starts out at, where it pairs back the clock speeds a little bit. Yeah, and there's the high performance mode, which they recommend for gaming, but which basically gives a very, very small battery hit in exchange for a little bit more responsiveness. I was running it on the top performance level, didn't notice any problems whatsoever. So I guess, as always, you know, your mileage may vary.
The software needs a shout out here. And I mean, what have we always said about Huawei phones? It's like, all right, the hardware's there. That's some really good hardware, and the software is crap.
And well, it's not crap, but the thing, I've been using another Huawei device this week. I've been using the Huawei MediaPad M2 10.0. The first thing, before we get to anything else, the first thing you need to understand about the Huawei MediaPad M2 10.0 is that it has a 10.1-inch screen. That is the level of coherent thinking behind this product. But this tablet is basically the epitome of the old weird Huawei, and going from the P9 back to that is kind of an eye-opener, because with the tablet, you have all the weird stuff that used to be there, like the fact notifications would have the weird font color that would make them impossible to see. And there are a bunch of other things, like the tablet would refer to itself in the settings as a phone, which was really strange. But it's less of an issue on the P9, but the overarching thing with Huawei and software has always been that there's just not that attention to detail there, especially when it comes to Google services and the kind of apps that people in the West use.
Nothing's broken now.
Nothing. Well, actually, Smart Lock is broken, or at least was. Mine.
Well, see, I haven't used Smart Lock for so long because the fingerprint
broken.
Well, sure. No, but the fingerprint sensor, it's a Huawei fingerprint sensor, so it works really well. And I haven't used Smart Lock since we've had fingerprint sensors now.
Yeah, so I was just digging around because I knew it was broken before, and it's apparently still broken. But I mean, we've had some of us have had an OTA update, so maybe that's fixed now.
I finally got one, the one that Alex was talking about that broke his phone. I finally got it over the air yesterday, 2 days ago. And then apparently another one is on its way now, and I don't have it yet. So if anything changes, you know, I'll update the review. But
one thing I want somebody, and you know, I picture in my head who I want to do it, and that's Anand.
Yes.
I want somebody.
Not sure
to
Apple
look,
will let him do it.
I know. It's a shame. But the Kirin, there is so much garbage on the internet about backdoors and crypto keys that the government has and spying. And, I have to admit that concerns me. How much of this is true? How much is not true? And that's something that Huawei needs to send their phone and their specs and their software to somebody who can sit there and say, okay, look, this is what it does. This is what it doesn't do. and then be done with it and put people at ease and make people stop saying all this.
And it all goes through your U.S. carriers anyway. So
I know, but no, you know what I'm talking about. There are people.
I do.
And it stems from the fact that the government didn't want Huawei telecom equipment because there was issues with cryptographic keys and potential backdoors. And, you know, that's a $1 million cellular gateway is not a P9 phone. And I just want somebody to clear that mess up.
Or we could stop being xenophobes.
Well, but no, we shouldn't stop being xenophobes. I mean, not everybody.
Some of that is realistic concern, absolutely.
And I
think a lot of that is just uneducated, and you can call it ignorant.
Sure. I
mean, but frankly, do not know the answer, and we're assuming the worst until then.
Right, and you have to look past, I mean, yeah, being xenophobic is bad, really bad for everybody, and I just said we shouldn't stop doing it. But what I meant was you look past that part of the issue.
And to be fair, that's not the worst thing you've said on this podcast.
I know. We won't have to bleep that one. But the people that have the concerns, even if the reason they have the concerns is misplaced, what if they're right?
I mean, and I just want somebody to put it all to bed. It goes beyond xenophobia. It goes to the fact that the actual ownership of Huawei is kind of completely opaque, and the fact that, yeah, there could be legitimate issues there with, you know, nation states wanting to go being out to get other nation states, and that is a legitimate thing that could be happening, and there is reason for concern there, even if it's all completely benign and nothing untoward is happening.
I am fairly confident that the Chinese government has a way to read the trust.
They don't need to sell you a phone to do that. Well, trust me.
I'm pretty sure the Chinese government has a way to bypass any of the hardware encryption and security. That's because that's what China wants. That's their rules. That's how they do it. But I don't know how much of an effect that would have on somebody in London who wants to buy a P9. And I just want somebody to tell us.
Fair enough. I was going to say that UMUI is actually really good now.
Well, let's not.
And here's why. Here's my reasoning behind that. Our answer has always been, well, just install a third-party launcher and it'll have all the other stuff you want. There are so many options baked into this now and so much you can do with it. If you cannot make this launcher work for you, it's because you didn't try. Period. It has, I mean, you've got transition animations. You've got, you know, a half dozen options for that. I mean, basically, the only thing it does not have is an app drawer.
The only thing that is left in EMUI that really bugs me now is the way it does notifications is better than what we've seen in previous Huawei phones. It's still kind of all over the place. The way lock screen notifications work is still tied into this weird magazine UI thing, and you have this thing where you can't expand notifications on the lock screen the way you normally can in Android. And if you unlock the phone, then it clears the lock screen notifications. But then they're still there in the normal notification tray, which looks different. It doesn't look like the Google way of doing things, but is arranged in a different way according to time. And it's just like, there's a bunch of stuff left over from previous versions of EMUI that just needs to be culled out and needs to be replaced with the way Google's been doing it since 5.0, which is a way that works.
You know what I say to
that?
All right,
fine, you're right.
If you don't like it, Huawei makes another phone that does it the Google way, and that's probably the one you should buy.
Yep. I'm just saying.
I'm all for choice.
Yeah, out of all the Huawei proper phones that we have used, this is the least broken. That's my line, and I'm sticking to it.
This is the
least terrible thing they've done.
I know, but no, it's been completely usable for me.
Yeah, and I could use this phone and not hate it. And
yeah,
there are a lot of phones that come out of that part of the world that are just different and that I just couldn't use. I think pretty much every Oppo phone that I've ever tried to use, it is just too different and too foreign and too weird for me to be able to get my head around the way the phone works. And the UI to me just looks ugly and I don't like it. And this is, you know, Huawei is slowly moving the direction of having something that is usable. You know, first of all, nothing is broken, but also having a UI that is more universal and not necessarily focused, laser focused in the Asian market like Huawei used to be.
I think... I think we're going to see more from them later this year along those lines. I think they are moving in the right direction on that.
I think they are. I think it's going to take time. The Huawei and software is still a very slow moving thing, and they have different teams in different parts of the world working on stuff. But if you look at the way it's been going and how closely they're working with Google, then you can probably draw your own conclusions.
And by the way, you still can't buy this in the US or Canada because they can't sell Kirin here. A whole bunch of other countries, but not here.
There's that rumor that Huawei is going to make a 7-inch Nexus tablet.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. They'll probably be the Huawei Nexus Pad 7.1. But
with a 7.2-inch screen.
Stop it. Well, anyway, I'm just saying. €599, and when you do all the translations, I mean, it's not that much money. It's not, and that's including tax and all that.
I mean, the difference in the UK, it's £449 unlocked. Yeah. And the carrier pricing kind of tallies with that.
And that's not a huge disparity.
Well, it isn't, right? But you look at how much the GS7 costs over here and how much the HTC 10 costs over here, and even the G5, it's a tier below that. And they have carrier deals with the big four. HTC no longer has deals with all four. They have E and 3 and no one else. And it's like this time around, the carriers have decided to give Huawei a shot because HTC phones, I guess, weren't selling last year. And if the P9 is relatively successful, then you could see a position next year where maybe Huawei is trying to be that de facto alternative to Samsung, the way LG and HTC have been trying to. And it could be very bad for HTC if they're able to successfully do that.
It'd be crippling to LG, too.
Yeah.
I think LG, the thing is, the difference, LG has the money to just... ride it out and try again another year, like they did before. And when they got burned on the Optimus 3D, they just, there was a year where there were no LG phones, and then LG came back the next year. HTC, if they have a cycle where no carriers pick up their phones, that is crippling to them. But we'll have to wait.
HTC had that kind of money once too.
Oh, they did, but HTC doesn't also sell refrigerators and toasters and all this other stuff that LG does.
LG can afford to make nothing on their smartphone division for a lot longer than anybody. Yeah.
Huawei VR?
Yeah, that CEA thing in China, I think, this past week, or the unveiling of the P9 in China. So it's uncanny how much this looks like a Gear VR.
Yes.
Down to the placement of all the straps and the ports, and obviously the way it looks.
It happens.
Well...
Complete and total accident. It's a coincidence.
It makes sense. I'm sorry. It makes perfect sense.
I'm still waiting to see what happens with LGs. Get back into VR.
LG has something interesting in that if you want to look at VR as this escapism thing for travel more than anything else, LG has by far the most portable of any of these things. And especially compared to Cardboard, compared to the Huawei VR, which is like this massive, oversized version of a Gear VR, which is already, if you're carrying in hand luggage, pretty massive. As we should all know, having carried some of these things back from MWC in hand luggage. I don't really see what Huawei is going to be bringing to this besides a clone of a Gear VR without any of the partnerships and without any of the really good software backing it up.
For now.
That's true.
For now, yeah, we'll see.
I think that's going to do it. I think that's a good podcast. It's a good return. Anything else we've forgotten this week? Next week, I promise we will catch up on emails and voicemails. We will get back in that. I've been crushed under a sea of reviews. Hey, I got the LG battery coffin for the G5. If you haven't read that, go read it. It's got a cool little like coffin door.
I wanted to talk about something, but I forget what it was. So it must have
been
the Robin. The Robin got a really nice update. If you own a Robin, make sure you take the update. If you've been on the fence about buying one, it's really good. The update was a smash success as far as I'm concerned. And yeah, you can read all about it at Android Central. It made a phone I really liked a whole lot better, and I didn't think it needed to be better.
Is it still worth $400 right now?
That's
$400 or $500
$400
That's tough. That's a hard price point. I mean, if I was going
to
spend,
no, Jerry.
If I was going to spend $400 on a phone, yes, I would buy the Robin over the Moto X or any phones in that price tag range. Yes.
Fair enough. It still looks beautiful. I sent mine to Russell to play with. It needed a good home.
It sits on my desk and I love it. I can't use it because it's not on Verizon, but
That I wish that could have materialized for the guys at Nextbit. But hey, you play with fire, you're going to get burned. You play with Verizon, you're playing with fire. So
yep. Have you just shoved a Verizon SIM in it to see what happens?
I'm going to now because I was like just thinking about it. That what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah,
police show up at your door.
Let them come.
All right, that's it for us this week. Send us some emails and voicemails, podcast@androidcentral.com. Hey, by the way, if you haven't subscribed to us on Google Play Music, go ahead and do that, even if it's not our favorite podcast player at this point. Just search for Android Central and then scroll down below anything that looks like music, because search results are kind of wonky. Google, why do you do this to me? Just saying.
Just let us love you.
We're trying. We're trying real hard. So next week, emails and voicemails will return. Andrew probably will be back and want to talk some, because he likes to do that. What else? Anything else going on next week?
We'll have a couple of reviews coming up next week. I guess I'll have a review of the Huawei MediaPad M2 10.0 with its 10.1-inch screen. Should have something else on the G5, I think, as well. And I'm going to be playing around.
I got to do a second opinion on the HTC 10 at some point too, soon.
Also that, I will also be playing around with an iPhone SE, so look out for that on...
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. Hey, by the way, I was just looking at the calendar. We only have like 2 weeks until we go to I.O.
Yeah, and then into Computex after that, which should be an interesting one this year.
I'm taking your M10 home from I.O. HTC 10, I guess the right
thing. So,
yeah, I'm just letting you know. I'll literally take it out of your bag. I don't care.
Fine.
Hey, wait, is yours the black one?
The gold Nexus 6B all over again.
No, mine is not the black one.
Who has the black one and will be
at I.O.? I have the black one. The screen's all messed up. Well, not messed up, but it came to me with a bunch of scratches on it, so.
Yeah, you've got that crazy Euro one anyway.
Plus, it only works on band 12, so you're kind of screwed there.
Yeah.
Basically, stop sending Alex phones is what he's saying.
Well, Alex probably installed a screen OTA and scratched it himself.
I've had no OTAs on my HTC 10, including any camera fixes.
But, well, then your camera is horrible.
Why did you say it? Why did you use the words?
Man, we almost got out of it. Look, there is no magic camera fix for the HTC 10. It's a really good camera already, and they're just tweaking some small stuff.
Not saying there won't be updates that will do camera-related things, but there is no fix that turns this from a bad camera into a good camera, and it is not a bad camera. It is a decent camera, but it is not a Samsung good camera, in my opinion.
I don't understand why we go through this with HTC phones every year. The M8, the M9, the 10.
So Russell linked me back to something I posted on Google Plus in 2013, and that we were talking about it back then for the M7 with a camera fix. It's like every year we go through this with HTC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Every single year.
Here's the thing, though. I get what it is. HTC has done a remarkable job cultivating a group of fans.
Yep.
You know, the HTC fans that are still loyal, they are just incredibly loyal. And the idea of a camera fix... just in general, is enough for them to go, oh, so maybe I do need to consider this phone over the S7 after seeing a bunch of stuff that's saying it's still a really good camera. It's just not above the S7. It's not really even quite as in line with the S7 as some of the benchmark things that we saw were led to believe. But it's still really, really good. So it's one of those things that there are a lot of people, I think, who are genuinely on the fence, who are HTC fans, who are considering jumping ship. And that's those are the group of people we're dealing with right now.
I think, yeah.
If you're an HTC fan
and the thing holding you back from going to the GS7 is the camera and the camera alone, I would say go for it. I mean, the camera, the difference between the two cameras is probably small enough that if that is the deciding factor for you, then yeah, absolutely go for the HTC 10. It has a really good camera.
And I think that group of fans unabashedly includes people in our line of work. And
sure.
And so we want to see them do well. But the problem is you're seeing these, and I don't want to call them out because I thought it was a really good review, except for the first 30 seconds where it was, this is a real review after this camera update. And well, the other ones were real reviews too. And the next one that we do will also be like, no one is more real than another. It just depends on when you've, you know, taken your picture. And by the way, there, Alex said there are going to be more camera updates. In fact, Jeff Gordon has said publicly on Twitter, there will be more updates to the camera. So, and this phone is still not shipping. So everybody calm down. Including me.
All I know is I have made a really stupid decision and got fooled by the prettiness of the rounded edge. And this S7 Edge is driving me freaking insane. Trying to hold it and use it. Every time I touch it, it just randomly clicks stuff. I need to just get rid of it.
You need the patch for that. Which version do you have?
I'll manually install it, and then I won't have to worry about it anymore.
I'll swap you your S7 back for your old Nexus 6P, and then we'll both have two of each phone.
Okay.
So those weren't real reviews before the display patch?
Jerry's going to deliver his screen patch with a hammer.
Well, no, it's an amazing phone. And you know what? This is Samsung has made phones that I could recommend to most people. But this is the first Samsung Android phone that I want to use. And it's absolutely beautiful with the curved glass on the sides. But I was a dummy and forgot why I hated the S6 Edge. And it's because when you hold it, you're hitting it. If you have one, you know what I mean. I can't adjust.
Well, yeah, if you have it and you haven't got the patch yet, seriously, I'm not joking.
Well, no,
there is a patch that's supposed to have addressed some of these things.
The T-Mobile one got that patch, and I do want to say it's better, but it's still, I need to relearn it, and I'm just too old to relearn things. How to hold a phone is something that I just can't relearn, and now I'm kicking myself.
Oh, well, you'll have there's another phone you could be using there with stock Android and a gold metal exterior.
I know, and that's my phone, but.
Russell, are you still in VR? Is there anything cooler going on in the virtual world?
No, this has actually been pretty comfortable. Like I don't feel any less comfortable than I did when I started after an hour plus of doing this.
Or so any less we comfortable hang up and you than he does talking to us normally.
Yeah. If we hang up and you stand up, you're going to like fall down immediately out of your chair and go into convulsions?
I don't know. I guess I'll try standing up right now. If I fall down, the end of the podcast will be really funny.
We'll just do it like The Sopranos and just...
No, it's fine. And actually, the screen moved with me when I stood up.
All right, that's it. We're out of here. Jerry, Russell, Alex, thank you. Everybody listening at home, thank you. Might try this audio thing for a little while. If not, we'll see. Next time.
See ya.
See you later.
I just don't want to clean your office.
Clean your mouth out with soap.
Sorry, I love the taste of soap.